Hello, good morning, and welcome. It's Friday, the 20th of November, 2020, and we're back with episode 172. I've got a wonderful guest with us today, but before getting started, please don't forget to drop me 5 stars over on Apple Podcasts, and be sure to follow me on all social media at Autonomous Hogue. Also, check us out at hogandco.com, that's H-O-A-G-A-N-D-C-O.com. All right, so I'm joined today by Brett Baver over at RideOS. Brett's coming at us over from Pittsburgh. So RideOS builds themselves as a universal mobility as a service platform. They provide software to efficiently move people and things throughout the world. That is a pretty good way to describe this really incredibly important thing they do, which is essentially to insert themselves as a layer as between pretty much any autonomous vehicle thing you can think of, theoretically, and really any industry vertical, and the optimization of their route planning from A to B. So they are hugely important, incredibly broad sweeping in their scope. And well, Brett's here to tell us all about it. So I hope you're sitting comfortably. Episode 172 with Brett Baver from RideOS begins now.
So at RideOS, we're not only in the space of autonomous vehicles. We're really a transportation platform. Our mission statement is building software to efficiently move people and things throughout the world. So right now, a lot of our business is in supporting companies that do ride hail and delivery, especially delivery this year since the pandemic began. That includes human-driven companies, but also working with those who are starting to create businesses with their self-driving vehicles as well. So that includes routing, that includes fleet optimization, as well as some stateful dispatch services and web tools to manage your fleet. But I think the thing that really sets us apart is what we do for the needs of autonomous vehicles. And that's where my team comes in. I work in Pittsburgh, where I spent the last few years working for Uber ATG before moving on over. My team that I've built here is supporting the needs of autonomous vehicles inside the platform. So that includes things like making sure we can properly represent the routes for the autonomous vehicles by modeling the operational domain. And then also being able to estimate still the driving times it takes to drive those routes inside of the OD as well.
How are you defining AVs in this case? I mean, in what context? I mean, are we talking delivery bots? Are we talking the existing kind of various companies testing AVs on the streets today? Or what's your scope or your breadth, I guess?
Yeah, I'm actually glad you asked because we have recently started working with sidewalk delivery bots as well. Because of the way our platform is built to be very flexible, we can actually work on different kinds of maps. So that can be roads or sidewalks or even, you know, private properties like shipyards, interior warehouse properties. As long as we have a map that represents the paths that can be taken, the connectivity between them, we can move agents inside of that to complete tasks inside of that network.
So you guys are basically like any vertical, any application, that's the point. You're really kind of open-ended, but where do you guys pull the mapping data from though?
Yeah, so we generally for most of our customers, we're working on the roads and we start with OpenStreetMap data. We are able, however, to ingest data that comes from the customer themselves and other data that we find useful in the future for new use cases.
The way you handle traffic data though is different, right? As I understand it, you're not actually, for lack of a better word, streaming real-time traffic data. That sounds like it'd be a massive overhead anyway. You're doing something a bit different.
Yeah.
I'm not fully grasping it, honestly.
Yeah. Well, let me explain a little bit. So we do a couple of things for the sake of autonomous vehicle partners. So one is getting route prediction right to improve fleet efficiency. And the other is getting route guidance right to improve individual vehicle performance. And so I can tell a little bit about each of those things separately. So one of the problems that can happen when autonomous vehicle companies are trying to bring up a service is Maybe they're running inside of someone else's network, or maybe they're trying to use someone's platform like RideOS or one of our competitors. But those systems, in order to make dispatch decisions, they have to be able to predict what the vehicles on that network are going to do. They need to know, can this vehicle successfully complete this trip? They need to know, which route will this vehicle take to complete that trip? And how long is it going to take to do that? If they don't get that right, then they might assign the wrong vehicle, which might not be able to do it, or might take a long time and make the fleet less efficient and the experience bad for the customer, right? So we give extremely flexible controls to model the operational domain for any kind of use case, autonomous vehicles that can't make unprotected left turns, ones that stay within certain arterial roads within the city. Any particular limitation you have can be modeled in our system. And then that is integrated through the entire stack so that you can get ETA matrices based on that. You can make dispatch decisions based on that. You can feed that information to a third-party transportation network so that they know exactly what your vehicles will be able to do, and they make good dispatch assignments to those vehicles.
So, okay, let me just take a step back for a moment just to make sure I get this. I mean, just at least anecdotally, academically, I mean, one of the hardest things that, you know, history shares about Uber's earliest days, especially since you were at Uber previously, mm-hmm. is that obviously it was precisely their ability to do the route optimization that mm-hmm. proved the most challenging, right? Mm-hmm. This then is presumably a pretty hard thing for anybody trying to get into this space to do right, mm-hmm. right? So whether it's for ride sharing or delivery services, certainly, as you say, AV applications generally, I'm guessing this will remain a very difficult thing. So is the idea that you guys are basically kind of offloading this part of the development for a company so that rather than developing this stuff in-house, people can just sort of use your solution?
That's right, yeah. So for the route prediction side of things, we provide the dispatch solution, and we do it in a way where we're going to make intelligent decisions based on what your vehicles can actually do in your operational domain. And in fact, if you're even, you know, if the vehicles are not taking into account things like traffic, they're going to make different decisions than a platform like ours typically would predict as well. But we can also account for that and actually match the sort of the costing that is used by those vehicles to really predict what they're going to do and make good decisions. But we also are moving into the space of doing route guidance, and that's where we can also take over the routing for an individual vehicle and help them stay within their operational domain, but inside of that, still take into account things like real-time traffic and events that will then allow them to make good decisions inside their operational domain. As that domain grows over time and there's more options to take your routes, that becomes more and more important in order to give your customers the best experience and the best route for where they need to go.
Got it. So just to be clear, then it's really a layer that goes on top of the foundational, say, autonomy layer, which is handling the actual perception and physical capability of driving. This then is strictly the routing capability, right?
That's right. And it lives in the cloud. So these right. would be integrated through API calls. The way I view this in terms of route guidance is it's essentially the equivalent of someone driving as a human and using a GPS navigation device. What we can provide is the route that can be followed by the vehicle. And as long as the developer can build that level of artificial intelligence, which can take in a route represented as a path of global coordinates, then figure out how to make the physical movements in the world by, in the typical case, matching that to their HD map, then they can get a route from us that will actually help them be more efficient inside of their operational domain.
So, I mean, stepping away from AVs just for a moment, as weird as that is for me to suggest, I mean, isn't this something that could theoretically be applied to like any car to sort of augment their existing onboard navigation?
Yeah, absolutely. One really interesting example of this, in fact, is I spoke with a company a while ago who makes low-speed vehicles, right? So these vehicles must stay under a certain speed limit legally. We recently launched a feature to only route on roads under a particular speed limit or over a particular mm-hmm. speed limit. It's flexible. You just set that criteria and we will restrict the routes in that way. And so that could be used for something like in-car navigation for human drivers when they need to know, you know, how to stay within those restrictions. And there's any number of reasons that a transportation network or a vehicle may need to restrict their operations in some way. It's not just the operational domains of AVs.
And I'm assuming this can be kind of custom tailored, limited, geofenced, restricted to certain roads as necessary.
That's right. Yeah. So you can limit it via areas, geofences. You can limit it via directed or bidirectional paths. So just the roads along that path. And you can even limit the particular maneuvers through an intersection. So don't go straight, don't turn right, don't turn left. The most common use case of that being, you know, don't take this unprotected left turn. This is the full expressivity that's actually needed to, you know, to match the operational domain of an AV. Whereas a lot of other competitors may be able to do something like a geofence. That really doesn't cover everything you need to be able to avoid specific turns and things like that.
Mm-hmm. And I'm not even sure if this is a valid question, but as I try to further wrap my head around all this, I mean, so there's been a lot of talk in the last couple years, really, so-called HD mapping, you know, real-time HD mapping providers mm-hmm. that are out there. I mean, this still is quite distinctly separate to that, right? So I guess just to focus on the real-time element of this, I mean, so one of the use cases that is often discussed is, for example, on a certain path, say maybe it's been obstructed because a tree suddenly fell over, I don't know, 5 minutes ago.
Right.
I'm assuming that's precisely not the sort of use case that this is designed for. Rather, this is more the generalized case where, look, this is how things are, and this is how you're going to optimally get from A to B. Am I correct that these sort of real-time cases are beyond the scope of what you guys take care of?
We actually do ingest real-time and historical traffic information. So that can include the effects of construction, the effects of incidents like you just listed. If we notice that traffic is not flowing anymore through a particular road, we can stop routing through there. We don't do that in the form right now of taking, you know, information about specifically what event is causing that traffic. But we do plan over time to enrich that understanding more and more and become, you know, even more intelligent at how we understand where you can go and how quickly you can go through there.
You know, TechCrunch described you guys when you raised your Series B, I think. I think I read somewhere that, you know, you're sort of the traffic control center for all this stuff, right?
Yeah, sure.
And it reminded me, is there like a municipality play in the future in the sense of, you know, one of the things that's, actually, I should back up. I remember, gosh, 20 years ago, I visited Singapore. And even back then, I was blown away to learn, you know, as a kid in school that like, wow, virtually all their roads are already monitored in real time and they have dynamic tolling to help regulate traffic and blah, blah, blah. It was super cool, right? And that was 20 years ago. Like, there's been a lot of talk lately about how there might be a very real need for that going forward as well, far beyond simply real-time tolling of roads and so forth. But really, again, this notion of kind of a air traffic control for AVs generally. Mm-hmm. And without spiraling too out of control into the rabbit hole of discussion I always love to get into, and so far as kind of federal regulation of AVs generally and so on and so forth, I mean, I feel like if indeed we eventually get to that point where truly level 4 and certainly level 5 vehicles are effectively a regulated thing just like air travel, it seems, I mean, I wonder if you see where I'm going with this, or I'm just totally rambling off the deep end here, but like I wonder whether there's a use case where municipalities would have a very real need, or there'd be some very real value for them to essentially ensure that this kind of functionality is baked into all AVs as a matter of course.
Yeah, I mean, I actually not too long ago made a connection with one of the leads in mobility in the city of Pittsburgh, and we're not actively involved in any project with them today, but being here in Pittsburgh, you know, when there are opportunities to work together with them, I would love to start there.
Also, it's Pittsburgh. I mean, you guys are like, I always affectionately call you guys like the epicenter of all things AV. It's just astonishing what little Pittsburgh has been rising up to become.
It's been amazing. I feel very fortunate to have been here to ride that wave from very close to the beginning at Uber APG. We had some interesting conversations about how we could support a variety of things. I mean, we could In the same way we support transportation networks, like we talked about earlier, we could support public transit applications of AV shuttles, for example. We also could potentially just be a layer by which you oversee and orchestrate on-demand AVs of a variety of sorts. I mean, we have the ability to bring together not only AVs, but human drivers, AVs with a variety of different operational domains, and put those all into one fleet. And you can then dispatch accordingly to based on the needs. So I would love to see a very dynamic, combined sort of transportation system, multimodal, with you know, different providers, different types and sizes of vehicles, all handling the demand of the city in a very dynamic fashion that really adapts as the needs of the city change. I mean, we've seen this year how much things can change very quickly, right? And things like a fixed route bus system with these large vehicles that don't get filled up most of the time just seem like they're really not that dynamic enough to support the needs of a city anymore.
You know, since you alluded to what's happening, this disaster of 2020, I mean, it's worth kind of segueing just for a moment. I mean, everybody's been suggesting, and I guess at least anecdotally and literally, it's been shown that there's been a bit of a slump in all things AV. Mm. I have optimistically, some might say somewhat foolishly, I don't know, been actually really kind of optimistic about all things in AV precisely because of what's been happening with COVID. Mm-hmm. I've been suggesting for a long time that actually, you know, the future is here. We're just not ready for it yet. I mean, if we were at a level 5 world already, things would be much easier to manage in this COVID world of ours. Yeah. So what's your view, at least personally, like, what's your view? Like, do you kind of agree or disagree? Like, should indeed not COVID be sort of a catalyst to if only because of the obvious value that a true AV future would offer?
Absolutely. I mean, I'll say I'm a little bit envious of people in Arizona who can ride a Waymo right now without a driver.
On the other hand, hold on though, their roads are larger than most airport runways. Sure. I mean, no offense to Waymo, I think it's awesome what they're doing. I say this as an affectionate, backhanded compliment, but come on, those roads are gigantic.
Absolutely. Oh, my whole point here being that they can get a ride and not worry about the driver giving them, you know, COVID-19, right? So I think that there's a lot of people, including myself, who are staying away from ride hail right now. In the beginning of the pandemic, the numbers I heard were around 80% drop or so in ride hail generally. And one of our partners, Alto, saw just this and had to pivot to, you know, delivery to make sure that they kept their business going. And that's a common story right now. But I would say that since there's most people don't have access to that kind of thing right now, one of the really active areas of development is in delivery and in freight. We're seeing an especially big need for that now with people buying more things from home. So everything from the sidewalk delivery bots, which we're starting to work with, small on-road delivery vehicles like your Nuros, I think Refractions. We're starting to talk with some companies like that as well, with, you know, companies like Udelve, which are, you know, more, I think, delivery van size, all the way up to freight trucks like TuSimple and Ike and Kodiak and so on, right? Every part of this chain is really, I think, accelerating in this year in their development because of the fact that everyone sees the need, right, and the commercial opportunity there. And in some ways it's an easier problem. You don't have to worry about, you know, the safety and comfort of a passenger, right? You can focus sometimes on operational domains that are simpler, like highways for freight, right? So there's a lot of movement in that space. I'm really excited about that.
Well, speaking of freight, at least anecdotally, I think we've all heard the story that UPS did so much work trying to optimize their routing predictions, you know, to optimize their drivers along their way, that they apparently generally don't allow left turns, for instance, although I think that might be more of a safety issue. Right? Mm. They don't have trucks turning left across oncoming traffic.
Well,
I mean, it seems to me like if there would be, like, in other words, how easy is it to integrate this layer of routing optimization into, shall we say, for lack of a better word, more legacy type companies. In other words, is there a reasonably straightforward path, say for a UPS or somebody like UPS, to effectively bake in what you guys have developed to really optimize their to optimize their optimization, shall we say?
No, absolutely. I mean, this is part of the reason why we have like APIs at different levels where you can integrate what makes sense to you. Everything from the lowest level, where if you have your own optimization algorithms, which I know some of these companies already have put a ton of work into that, if you just want to feed into that accurate ETAs, you can call our system to get accurate ETAs for any number of different types of vehicles with different types of constraints, right? If you want to integrate at a higher level, like you already have your service running, but you're willing to offload the optimization problem to a company like ours that can focus on making that very efficient, effective. We can also just have you send your vehicles, your tasks, and into a stateless API call and just send you back a solution whenever you need it. And then at the highest levels, you know, you can integrate with us at the stateful dispatch level. We can run sort of the whole state of your service for you. All the way up to we're gearing up to launch some more new web tools that really make it possible to do integrations with no code at all for companies that are less technical but want to still, you know, take advantage of all of this technology.
This is pretty cool. I mean, it's really widespread, right? I mean, I'm just sort of just imagining this could definitely cross a lot of different industry verticals, right? I mean, and I would imagine it could theoretically even go beyond, shall we say, conventional vehicles. I mean, I feel like this could be used to optimize just about anything going from A to B.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Right now, specifically focusing on anything that has a connected network of paths that it can travel through, right?
Which,
like I said, could be sidewalks, could be corridors in a building. However, over time, I imagine we may even want to branch out beyond that to things like urban aviation and so on. But I'm very much speculating the future at this point to say that.
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, how did you get into the space, by the way? I know you said you were formerly at Uber, but your original foray into all things AV and that sort of thing, was your background primarily in, I'm guessing engineering of some sort?
Yeah, so after graduation, I worked at Google for several years, and I worked on a lot of different things. One of the things I worked on there was what became Google Express, which was, at the time, we were trying to make it a same-day delivery service that would pick up your packages from each of local stores and bring them to your door. And
I actually remember this.
Yeah, I think the service is still running, but I think it may have shifted a bit to not same-day delivery. But I haven't used it in some time, so I'm not exactly sure. But during that time, I worked on the shipping team and learned about fleet optimization, how we were taking these pickups and drop-offs and consolidating them in order to make them efficient. And so during my time at Google here in Pittsburgh, I heard about them bringing up the new Advanced Technologies Center here for Uber. And I had been wanting to get into self-driving cars for quite a long time. So I reached out, and I was the first person from Google Pittsburgh to join the company in 2015. Then during that time, I was one of the earliest members of the AV routing team and spent about 4 years there, eventually becoming a tech lead and a manager inside of that team. So I learned all kinds of things about what are the needs of autonomous vehicles for their uses in testing, for their uses in real world trips. You know, we were one of the first to launch actual trips with actual customers in level 3 autonomous vehicles in the United States. That was back in, I think, September of 2016. And I was sitting at that boundary between the dispatches we received from Uber and the routing we did on board the vehicles. And I learned a lot about those challenges sitting, you know, right there at that boundary, right? So when Justin Ho, the CEO of RideOS, came to talk to me, it just seemed like you know, the perfect fit to take my web services background from Google, my AV routing background from ATG, and sort of that knowledge about how, you know, trip dispatch and AVs interact with each other. So I can speak the language of the autonomous vehicle developers and help them see the value that we can provide from the dispatch side and the routing side at RideOS.
Huh. Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And actually, it's funny, it triggered a memory of mine. I wonder if you remember this. You know, your usage of the word dispatch reminds me, I remember the pre-Twitter days. Remember Jack Dorsey used to originally work on a thing trying to track or visualize ambulance dispatch. Did you ever read about this? Do you remember this?
I don't remember that, no.
Yeah, I mean, this just goes back, well, I guess this would have been sometime around the early 2000s, I suppose. But my point is, this is a very real issue that goes way back, depending on how you want to define the scope of the problem. But
absolutely. Yeah.
And obviously now with AVs, it's like the perfect use case. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Huh. So what do you think then? I mean, just taking a step back more broadly for a second, how does one ultimately solve the consumer acceptance problem for AVs? I mean, is this something you guys give much thought to, or at least you personally? I mean, is this notion of, you know, so let me rephrase the question this way. Mm-hmm. I've often thought for a while that with all due respect to the engineers working on these really, really difficult problems, you know, I think that if within about 5 to 10 years, we don't start to see some real headway being made, it's frankly going to be the fault of municipal leaders and, you know, policymakers and regulators. They're going to be holding things back rather than the actual engineering. What do you think?
Maybe so. I think we're in an interesting state. So there was an excellent presentation by a presenter from PAVE at the AV Symposium conference this summer that this makes me think of. It was one of my favorites from that conference. There is sort of a perception problem and an acceptance problem in both directions right now, right? So we have people who don't have much exposure or understanding of AVs who don't trust them at all, right? I would never get on that. I don't think it would be safe. But maybe if they just got some exposure, that might start to change. And in fact, we do see then people who start to get exposed to more advanced, like level 2 ADAS systems or sometimes level 3 testing, they start to trust it quite a bit. And in fact, they then maybe swing too far on the other side to overtrust, right? Which is where we see not only consumers using things like Tesla Autopilot, but level 3, you know, safety drivers who have been trained and really should understand what to do, overtrusting the vehicle and causing issues even, you know, within a company as a trained employee. And so finding that right balance is very much an education problem that organizations like PAVE is working on. And you know, they struggle with things like the SAE level system, level 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. How do you communicate this to consumers in a way that they understand and know how to interact safely with these vehicles? How do you avoid, you know, someone seeing an issue with a level 2 vehicle that is the driver's fault because they were overconfident, and then themselves thinking, oh, I should never trust a level 4 vehicle, right? When they don't see the difference between these things. So I would love to see some solutions to that. I haven't seen a proposal yet that I think solves that, but I am concerned that we really need to sort through these misunderstandings with some sort of education.
But unless I'm reading between the lines, then it kind of sounds like we might share the same opinion that at some point this does need to be federally regulated.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I'm very much in support of reasonable regulations to keep people safe. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, so zooming back to your actual product, or I should say products, plural, mm-hmm. strictly speaking, it's three different things, right?
Yeah, you could say that. We have the routing sort of level, we have the optimization level, and then we have kind of a large bucket that we call Command Center, which includes our dispatch and our web tools and so on.
And is it necessarily the case that a company is going to rely on all three of these, or do they tend to sort of pick and choose?
Yeah, I would say that we we most often see people either at the highest level doing a full dispatch solution, or at the lowest level using routing for guidance or ETAs. The optimization level, we've had some discussions, but it's less commonly used. Yeah.
So what are some of the coolest use cases you can share? I don't know how much you can discuss publicly, I guess, either presently or what you're looking forward to. I know that's always first and foremost on people's minds.
One of the things that I'm really proud of on my team that we recently launched, I'd also love to talk about, is pickup drop-off API. So this is a space where autonomous vehicles have particular challenges, but also human drivers as well. I remember using Uber for many years and finding that the drivers were often sent to, you know, the wrong street, like a back alley behind the building. And when you send an autonomous vehicle to do the same thing, it doesn't have a human to call the rider and look at the map and figure out where it should go instead, right? So we want to solve that for both humans and for AVs. And for AVs, we hope to solve even more around parking and loading zones, you know, curb management and so on. But what we have today as a starting point is an API where you can take something like the pin that a user may have dropped on the map for where they want to be picked up, and understand things like, this is the appropriate access point to drive to in order to pick someone up for that venue. And, you know, we really think that that's going to not only help AVs do the right thing, but also help make our, you know, our ETAs more accurate, help our human drivers. And that's a very recent launch that we'd love to help people use soon.
Yeah, I mean, in sort of urban cores of cities, this is essential. I remember that, I mean, it's been a while. To your point earlier, it's been a long time since I've used an Uber or a Lyft. Mm-hmm. But I do remember Uber had rolled out a while ago this thing where, you know, you drop your pin and then it would say, hey, walk to such and such street corner to meet them.
Yeah.
I'm guessing that's a rather ambiguous thing. I'm guessing what you guys are doing is a lot more kind of micro detailed, right?
Based on
knowledge of the actual area rather than just, say, distance or the direction the car is going.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a couple different things here. If you were using something like Uber Pool, one of the reasons that they might send you to walk is just to make the overall route more efficient. You know, if the car doesn't have to turn off of its current route in order to come pick you up. That's a thing that we may want to do in the future as well. We do actually support pooling in our dispatch and optimization products. We don't do that kind of express pool thing yet, but it is something that we'd love to do on our roadmap in the future. Right now, this is focused specifically on, you know, hey, I want to be picked up at this building downtown. Don't go to that little alley just because it's the one that happens to be slightly closer to the pin I dropped on the map or my GPS location on my phone. You know, come to the front where you can park in the curb in front of the building and I can walk out and meet you.
Is there an argument to be made in favor of working closely with cities to, let's see, to kind of designate pickup areas in the same way we have bus or even taxi loading zones to just designate these things for autonomous ride pickups?
I think it would be great. It's a hotly contested, you know, space, right? As you know, I think recently you were at the Curbivore conference, right?
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of people who are trying to figure out how to use that space most effectively. I mean, there's people with smart curb management systems that are largely focused, I think, on commercial delivery use cases, trying to do these like micro transactions for just the time that you stop and maybe even let you reserve it slightly in advance. I could see the same thing happening for pickups and drop-offs via AVs. I'm not sure that they're focusing on those use cases that much these days, but I do see that as a future state that is likely to happen. Dedicated loading zones that aren't allowing for a little more dynamism like those solutions seem less likely to take on for me, because I think it's just there's so many new things that we want to do with these spaces. There's so much contention for these spaces. If we can dynamically manage them and balance between all, you know, the ride hails, the deliveries, and the personal vehicles. I think that that probably is has the most promise.
But I mean, yeah, again, with respect to Pittsburgh, I mean, everything I know about your mayor, not to mention all the various initiatives going on in Pittsburgh, I feel like that would be like the optimal place to try to, you know, prioritize that sort of, you know, curb usage programs, at least for testing. You know?
Yeah, I would love to see that. I haven't heard of that being prioritized in Pittsburgh yet. It would be great.
Well, this is very cool. I mean, it's really neat because, right, like there's so many, obviously there's tons of different technology companies. There's admittedly a bunch of different, you know, mapping companies. I feel like what you guys are doing is a pretty singularly focused thing. At least I'm not really familiar with too many folks trying to compete in this space, at least not to the depth and I guess breadth that you guys are doing. This is pretty neat.
Yeah, I'm especially proud of how we bring together sort of the things that mapping and routing companies are usually good at, and also the things that the sort of routing technologies within the autonomous vehicle companies are good at. We can both respect the operational domain and also make intelligent routing decisions inside of it. Whereas the AV companies may not be aware of traffic and they may do something very simple in their OD, we can help them do something more efficient, right? And whereas the mapping and routing company may not understand what an AV is actually going to do, we can help them do that and also do the intelligent routing that they do with traffic awareness and the like.
You know, that's a really good point. What you just touched on is, let's face it, this is a space, AV in the broadest sense of the word, that is really so difficult that indeed, you've got companies that are super, super focused on one aspect of it, at a minimum, at a high level, doing the hardware, maybe doing the software, just doing the automotive part. It's very rare that somebody's managing to do all of it, or in this case, mapping or routing, for example. And then everyone's realizing they either have to partner up with somebody or they've got to, at least rely on somebody else to do some subset of those tasks, right? It's so exceedingly complex. I mean, we saw, yeah, for example, Zoox was arguably one of the more promising companies out there to try and do all of the above, but obviously they got gobbled up by Amazon, right? So it's a very unique kind of a thing, right? All the AV tech companies practically are partnering up with an automotive company, right? Because AV tech startups can't build cars, and car companies have learned very quickly they can't build AV tech, right? So you guys kind of slot really neatly in the middle where you can kind of work with everybody.
That's right. In fact, the manufacturers also are worried about, losing relevance as we move toward more shared mobility services. So a lot of them are also moving in that direction. And that's a great place for us to come in and support them optimizing their fleets and becoming a mobility service provider. We're having those conversations as well with the OEMs for sure.
Yeah. I mean, if you have a few minutes, actually, it's worth unpacking that concern the OEMs have. I mean, I've suggested for a while that, there's the age old marketing question. How does BMW continue to market themselves as the ultimate driving machine if there's no steering wheel, right?
Right.
And so I've suggested that that's not really what's going to happen though. Mm. I mean, looking further down the road, so to speak, I've got to stop using that expression in the context of AVs. My theory is that because human-driven cars will still be around for obviously quite some time and indeed coexist, maybe in different regions, different roads, but regardless, I think that the optimal way for existing automobile companies to continue to flourish is to really offer AV solutions, whether it's ride sharing or anything else besides, as an alternative. The person who wants to buy a human-driven car is not going to be in the market for an autonomous pod thing. That's just not going to happen, right? These are alternatives. If anything, they're more of like transit solutions rather than personal use, which of course they must be, because again, the autonomous future presupposes a shared future, right? So you would never kind of cross-shop those things, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think there will always be multiple modes of transportation, right? And there will be personal modes, whether they're autonomous or not. There will be shared modes, whether they're private or public, autonomous or not. And there's micro mobility, which now people are also looking at making autonomous as well. There's going to be a mix of these things. And this is actually part of why we believe that we have quite a market available to us, right? We're not expecting a future where you know, each city has one monopoly on transportation, but rather a lot of different options, many of which we can support, even if they're wildly different. And we can become a platform for all of that, you know, multimodal transportation in a city.
Absolutely. Well, I'd say you guys are sitting pretty comfortably there then. And look, with respect for your time, we should probably call it a wrap. I mean, this has been really great chatting. And finally, like I said, wrapping my head around everything you guys are doing.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, I've really enjoyed listening to the podcast lately, and I'm glad to join you as well.
Well, thank you for that. Yeah, it's my pleasure. Obviously, keep in touch, and we'll talk soon. Be sure to check out RideOS at rideos.ai. That's RIDEOS.AI. Until next time, that is a wrap for today, and indeed this week. Thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful weekend. See you back here on Tuesday. Bye-bye.